Welcome to the Lost American, podcast number 20. I've got a question for you. Do you feel that you are truly represented? The people that your state sends to Washington, do they represent you? How could they, really? I mean, if you really think about it, I guess like if you have to, if you have a meeting, let's say, at work, and you say, hey, Bob, listen, I won't be able to make it, but this is what I think about it. Could you please relay how I feel about this situation to the board or the other people at the meeting? Now, this, you know, this is highly possible. One person could represent the other. But let's say now we have two people who can't make it to the meeting. And Bill says, you know, I hate this idea. You know, be sure that the people at the meeting know that I hate it. Whereas Fred might say, oh, I love the idea. So, hey, Billy, you're going to the meeting and, Bob and I can't make it. So could you please represent us? Okay, well, now Billy, maybe perhaps he could represent one and then the other. Bob thinks this way. Fred thinks this way. But now let's add more. Let's say 10 people. Could one person represent these 10 people who might have totally contradictory opinions and values? Now let's multiply that by 100. Is it possible that your representatives actually represent you? Of course not. How could they represent everyone in the state? They don't represent what the people want. And that has been proven time and time again, where the majority of the people want one thing of the whole state, but if that's not what your quote-unquote representative wants, because your representative, I mean, come on, let's really look at it, they have the opinion that, well, you guys are just, you know, you don't know what's best. You don't have all the information in front of you, so you can tell me what you think, however, I'm going to vote the way I think is necessary, or, you know, who's ever going to, you know, fund my next campaign. This idea of representing other people just doesn't, you know, fly with me. I mean, do you really think Congress really represents what the people want? You know, of course they don't. Of course they do not. They represent their own interests, not yours, not mine, no one other than their own. And of course their parties. I mean, Congress is a sham. We all know that. They're at an all-time low of support where people think that the Congress really represents them. But this kind of goes into a deeper picture, I think. I believe. I think it's in Maryland right now. There are, I think it's five counties in, I think it's Western Maryland, that want to secede from Maryland and create their own state. Now, we've heard this, and there have been many secession movements going around, you know, the United States for the longest time. You know, you don't really hear about them too often. Every once in a while, they'll pop up in the news, especially places like Texas. I know there's a big secession movement in Colorado. I think Montana also. New Hampshire. There's all of these secession movements that they want to break off from the United States, from the federal government. And to be quite honest, I think it's a wonderful idea. I mean, think about your own state where you live and think about what does the federal government do for you? I'm waiting for your response here. I mean, what do they really offer you? What does the federal government do for your state? Nothing. Your state is forced to give the money they collect to the federal government. The federal government then, in turn, if that state meets these certain requirements, they give some of the money, not all of it, they give some of the money back to the state. And then the state uses that within its own, you know, borders. The state's borders. The state, the local state, I think they are much more in touch with the state in which you live than the federal government. I mean, I think we, if we all really look at that, I mean, we would all come to the same conclusion. that the people who living in the state knows what the state needs more than the federal government. Are we in agreement with that? I think so. I think we're all pretty much in agreement with that. So given that fact, or given that assumption that your state, the people who live in your state, knows what your state needs more than the federal government, then you need to ask yourself, why do we need the federal government to begin with? Wouldn't it be better if we could keep control of our state in our state? If you look at some states like, we'll say California, where I think, don't quote me, but I think 13% of the GPD of the United States comes from California. It comes from California. Now, a state like California could be very self-sufficient on its own without the federal government. If they seceded from the Union, they would be much better off. And if you ask someone in Florida, or if you ask someone in Montana or Arkansas, hey, what do you think about California breaking off from the Union and creating their own state? They probably wouldn't care because, well, I don't know, that's in California. That's thousands of miles away from me. It doesn't affect me one bit. People from Washington State, would you really care? Would it even affect you, impact you in any way if the state of, oh, I don't know, Kentucky wanted to secede from the Union? Huh? Would it affect you at all? For Kentucky, it would be the best thing. A lot of these states could be self-sufficient. Some could not. I mean, some of the mid-states where a lot of agriculture is, they could be very self-sufficient also because they do have products there that they produce and could then in turn sell. Now, some people might think, well, wait a minute, wasn't this tried before? Didn't they try this? Isn't this what the Civil War is about? Well, that's correct. They did want to secede from the Union because they felt that they were not their, you know, whatever it was, slavery, and a lot of it had to do with taxes and tariffs, were not represented. And so they figured that, you know, hey, how about, you know, let's keep an amicable relationship. You go your way, we'll go ours, but you know, we live on the same landmass and we can trade and whatnot, and you know, let's bygones be bygones. And then somebody had to, you know, shoot a rifle, and then the whole thing erupted. Do you think that today, if a state wanted to secede, that the government would send in troops and tanks to stop the civil unrest? If you do think that, if you do, and this is important, if you think that, well, God, they can't secede. What do you think, the government's just going to let them do it? You know, they're going to be sending in troops in and whatnot. If you really believe that, then, my God, you must be terrified of your own government. That your own government would do that to its own people. That is an argument within itself. Why secession would be a good idea to get away from that form of government. But we all know, or maybe we don't, but in order for something like this to actually happen, secession, of course, Congress has to vote on it. And of course they won't. Of course they would not allow that one state to break off from the Union. I mean, that would show weakness to the rest of the world, that America's breaking up, just like the old Soviet Union did. So, what's the answer? How could a state secede?
Well, I'll tell you how you do it. You get them, you arm your people. Yeah, everyone's got a gun, you see, and you stand on your borders and you protect the borders of your state. That's what you do. And when those, you know, those federal guys come in while your state troopers there, you got to blow them away. And you tell them this is our country. You're like invading our country.
Yeah, well, that's one way to do it. However, violence only begets violence, and that's not going to work. What would work, probably in a longer, you know, way, is non-compliance. Start with the state not sending any of its tax that it collects from you to the federal government. Stop accepting federal grants for your roads. Keep all the money within the state. Now, for those of you who have perhaps listened to some of my other podcasts will know that I feel that taxes are theft. 100% they're theft. The government allows you to keep part of the money that you make. That is, in itself, a form of slavery. If you break it down, if you really look at it at its roots, it's slavery. If they can tax your labor, that means they own you. And if you want to look at it even a little bit further, if you personally, if you want to secede from the United States, if you want to give up your citizenship, do you realize you have to pay an exit tax? You have to pay for your own freedom. That is, you know, that's slavery. We all know that. We just don't really want to say it. But if you look at it and tear it down to its logical conclusion, that's what it is. If you have to pay to leave a country, if you have to pay your government, you're a slave. America is the only country which taxes its citizens who work outside of the state. Outside of the country, sorry. So, in other words, if Bill leaves America and is working in Europe somewhere, the United States government will tax him on his income that he makes in Europe. So it's basically the same if you know, he stays in New York. The tax is the same. And an argument could be made there. Some people will make the argument that, well, the reason that you are successful and are somewhat wealthy now is because of the foundation that we, the United States government, has created for you, which allows you to be successful. Without us, you would not be where you are today. But if you're not working in that country, which has apparently, you know, created the foundation for you to become successful, then what gives you the right to tax somebody who's working outside of your country, where your country has nothing to do with? How could you still tax someone on that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you belong to them. They own your labor. And if somebody owns your labor and feel that they could tax your labor, well, come on. You are a peasant. It's just another, you know, that's the word for citizen. That's what it used to be, a peasant. Boy, I really didn't want to go this road. I didn't want to go down this road, but this is where it led me. Where was I originally? Secession, of course, secession. How do we succeed? How do we secede? Well, we do it by non-compliance and non-violently. That is a key. For even though you might be just furious at our federal government doing what they do, as soon as you pick up a gun and try to defend yourself, well, that will be looked at as, you know, this is a lunatic guy. He kind of went crazy and he shot up a bunch of people. He shot at some cops or some federal agents, so obviously he's a little bit, messed up in the head. And whatever justification you had for that will be lost. It will just be seen as a violent person who has lost touch with reality, which maybe I have. Quote, I'm not violent, but, maybe I've lost touch. But one thing that I haven't lost touch about is people and about how different they are. And one idea, reason that we want that America was founded was, the idea. And also, let's take a look at Martin Luther King, the civil rights movement. Let's take a look at that. Okay, let's take a look at this really clear. Now, some people still believe that we would have slavery today if the Civil War had not occurred. That is very short-sighted and just totally false. Some people believe that without Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement, that racism would still be abundantly clear and practiced in America, and we would still have segregation. That also is somewhat of a false statement, because we still have racism today. We still have segregation today. The federal government forcing universities to accept other people of different race was a blanket, was a band-aid. It didn't heal any wound. It just kind of covered it up. And so it kept the real, the honest problem with racism, it kind of swept it under the rug and said, see, everything's okay now. Everything is not okay. If you force someone, if you put a gun to their head and tell them you have to do it, well, of course they're going to do it, but they're going to resent you for it later. And they're going to find any way possible to get you back. So am I saying that? Are you saying that we should still have restaurants that could say no Asians allowed, or no black people allowed, or no white people allowed? Are you actually saying that? Well, if you believe in property, if you believe that you own your property and that you should be allowed to do what you want to do on this property, yes, I am saying that. I am saying that. Now, the person who owns a restaurant that says no Asians allowed here, well, I, for one, will not frequent that restaurant. And I, for one, given my ability to do so, I would protest against this restaurant. I would make sure that the other people in the area know that this restaurant practices racism. Yes, it is their right to do so, but I want to make sure everyone else around is aware of that fact. And I think their business would go down, because there are more of us than there are of them. There are more people out there who do know and who do realize that your race and your color has nothing to do with you as an individual. My God, we're all people. There are more people who think that way than the Neanderthals of the past who believe, well, they're just not as smart as we are. It's too bad for them. So yes, I am saying that. I am saying that. And if you look at it, when you put away your emotions, if you put the, I guess I would have to say liberal ideas, if you throw them out the window and just look at it logically, look at it as a business approach, a practice, you would realize that a restaurant or a company that practiced that stark racism would not be in business that long. The people in the community and the market would solve that problem, resolve that conflict, basically. And now let's look at this at a bigger scale. What if a group of people get together and buy all the property up in a certain area, which is going on right now? I can't remember. This is a story about some guy who wants to create a white supremacist area. And he's buying up all the land in a certain area. And he's marketing it to people like him to only attract those type of people in the community. And I guess there's only one black man living in the community right now, and he's a little bit nervous. Now, should this man be allowed to do that? Should people be allowed to come together who have a specific set of beliefs, whether as twisted as they are? Should that be? Of course it should be allowed. Of course. And I guarantee it. Look at it. You will have a group of white racists in one area. They will only attract other white racists. And they will be left on their own to their own desires and needs. Other people, the majority of us, will not have anything to do with them. They will be an island. And sooner or later, they will die out. As long as it's not done forcefully. If we force them, if we force a restaurant to say, hey, you have to accept everybody, no matter what race and creed they are, you have to accept everyone. Well, because it was forced, they will have to do it, but yet it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. It just hides it. Boy, how did I get to hear from secession? I'm sorry. Anyway, I know there's a couple ideas out there. Secession, I find, is a wonderful idea. Force, I find, is a terrible idea. And of course, violence, I don't agree with one bit. However, if you do have a different opinion, I would love to hear it. Email me at thelostamerican@yahoo.com or leave me a video message on Skype. My Skype name is I Am The Lost American. I will take your video, rip the audio from it, and include it in the next podcast. So we can have other opinions on here too. And please, if you have a contrasting opinion, give it to me. Let me have it. I love these kind of discussions. This is what we need more of, not force. Anyway, take care and see you soon. Ciao.